my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
That we can, and so help us God, we will make America great again.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the No Gimmicks Podcast. I'm your humble host, as always, Brady Leonard. Hopefully you guys are having a terrific week. A great show for you today. I was joined by my brother, Drew Holden. Always a great time talking to Drew. And we had a ton to discuss, as always. We talked about Drew's brand new Substack, which is dedicated exclusively to taking down corporate press. Obviously, a topic near and dear to my heart. I encourage you to support Drew's efforts there. And we talked about the Biden regime, talking about importing what I assume will be hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees to America. We talked about the transgender race communists kidnapping Jews now on college campuses and just how the press is, the media malfeasance and how they've been covering all this stuff. I think you guys will enjoy it. Before I get to Drew, guys, if you haven't already, please follow us on Twitter at No Gimmicks Pod. Please subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to subscribe. If you're an Apple user, please take a couple seconds to leave us a 5-star rating and a good review. I'd really appreciate that. All right, without further ado, the great Drew Holden. All right, guys, we're here with my brother, Drew Holden. Drew, how you been, man?
Brady, dude, I've been good, man. I've been really good. Thank you for having me back on. I'm thrilled to be back and chatting with you.
Anytime, my friend. So, dude, this is why I respect you so much. You and I both essentially changed our career paths because we wanted to take down corporate media so badly. which is a noble quest, I will say. Yeah. And you've recently redoubled your efforts to bring down the most ridiculous, clownish, corrupt hacks on the planet. So tell us all about it.
I have indeed. Yeah. So for folks who aren't aware of it, I started a Substack. It's called Holden Court. You can search Holden Court or my name on Substack and it'll come up. And basically what I want to do is keep doing media criticism. And I think the biggest focus of what I want to do is I want to do media criticism that, one, is like somewhat outside of time. Like, it's not always trying to keep up with the media cycle. It's not always trying to, you know, find a media angle for whatever the big breaking story is. But two, and more importantly, is tied to what outlets actually said, right? I think the power in the threads that I do on Twitter are that it's highlighting the media's own words, right? The actual things they said. And I worry sometimes, I think, that, you know, the more I've done the media criticism thing, that a lot of people, particularly on the right who criticize the media, they do it in almost this kind of impressionistic sense. It's, we know the media is bad. We know they feel this way about this topic. And so people kind of talk in generalities. And there's just kind of this old refrain of like, oh, the media is bad, the media is broken, the media is liberal, the media is biased, whatever it is. And that works really well in an echo chamber of people who already agree with you. But 57% of Americans, based on a Pew study from a couple of years ago, still go to mainstream media and trust the facts that they get there.
Really?
Right? And which to me is insane, right? Because trust in the media, they poll this all the time. Trust in the media is at like 26% or something. It's down there with Congress as the least trusted institutions. But when you ask the question a different way, right, when you actually ask people, what are their consumption habits? How do you actually get facts? How do you actually get information? Even as, you know, Facebook and Twitter and God forbid TikTok start to rise in terms of how much people consume them, people's consumption of mainstream national news outlets is still really high, and they go to it because they believe those facts. It's like this crazy duality that the average consumer has. And I think, and you know, this is me speculating, but I think that one of the reasons is that criticism of the media happens when there are these big moments, or they do something really bad, or there's this really awful piece that kind of makes it away, you know, makes its way all the rounds, right? Or you have these big moments in time, like the Russian collusion narrative about Trump, where regular people are looking and pointing and saying, this doesn't check, this doesn't hold up, and I remember how bad the media was. But I think there's all of these other issues and all of these other topics where we don't quite remember how bad the media is, and we don't quite remember how much they missed on these topics. And so I've revisited a couple of older news cycles. So I did early COVID lockdown coverage around the 4-year anniversary of it, because it's been 4 years. And the lab leak hypothesis, the origin of COVID idea, media and the way the media actually talked about these things. Because I think if we can ground our criticism in what the media said, particularly when they're all kind of saying the same thing, but actually write it down, right? Actually take stock of the things that they said, I think it'll have more impact. So we'll see if I'm right in that hypothesis, but that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, 100%. And I appreciate you bringing up the COVID era, too. I talk about that all the time. Mm-hmm. Because it destroyed the country. I mean, that was we're going to look back, and we're going to talk a little bit about this later in terms of other things we're going to discuss. But like, it's going to take a generation at least to even realize what 2020 did to the country.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
We haven't scratched the surface yet, I don't think.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. And I think part of it is, you know, the bad impacts that are going to be felt are like so many of them just haven't happened yet. Like we're starting to get our hand, you know, the New York Times had an editorial from their editorial board maybe 3 months ago about learning loss. And it's like, wow, okay, we're in early 2024. And the fact that kids couldn't go to school for a year finally has caught up to you guys as a thing that led to bad outcomes, right? And if that's how we're responding to something that's already happening, moment in time, you can study it, you can look at it, what about all the other things, right? What about all the other impacts that are going to be downstream from all of this that we haven't even begun to consider? And I think you're right, our generation may be too soon, right? Like this almost feels a little bit like, you know, we're looking back at like I can just see a future American like 40, 50, 60 years unearthing new information about what we learned from lockdowns and from COVID and from our response. Yeah. And I'm horrified at what they're going to discover.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, anyway, I was just going to say, and so one of the reasons why I want to be diligent about capturing this stuff as it happens, but even like months and years after it happens, and still kind of that like short-term memory phases, I worry we're forgetting these things. And I really hope that when we go back and start to unpack all of these details in the months and years ahead, we have a better version, kind of first rough draft of history that the media is supposed to provide of the media itself and where they aired and where they got things wrong. Because I think it's going to help, hopefully, in some of that unearthing process.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%, man. 100%. And Americans have, especially 2020, Americans are trying their best to ignore it. Pretend it didn't happen.
Yes.
I mean, you saw it with like when Ron DeSantis ran for president, like nobody wanted to hear it. You know, he was one of the only governors that was good on COVID. He was the only one that stood up to Fauci and Birx and these people. The voters are like, oh, no. Just thumb in their ears. Like, we don't want to hear it. You know, and it's like they destroyed your lives and you don't care. Like you don't want to hold anybody to account. No. Okay. Yeah. That's a decision.
Yeah. And I worry we forget these things so quickly. Right. Like I went back. One of the reasons I wanted to write about the 4-year anniversary of lockdowns is because I went back and looked at some of the coverage and I had forgotten it. Right. Like as the guy who was like the keeper of receipts or whatever, like I went back into things that I had screenshotted 4 years ago and revisited them and thought to myself, you know, oh no, this is like, I knew it was bad, but it wasn't apparent to me just how bad it was. And if that's the case, when I already have all these screenshots on my phone that reveal that truth, then I worry everyone else is just as guilty of that forgetting as I've been.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that era, man, like these last 4 years it's extra difficult on Americans because just something happened. Like something happened to the conscious of America. Like I was doing some fishing with my buddy, my former guitar player, Eric, a bunch the last couple weeks. And we kind of fell out of touch for a little bit and didn't hang out for a while. And I thought, I was like, man, I haven't seen him in like 3 years. He was like, dude, his oldest son's like 8. Like, you haven't seen him since he was like 1. You know what I mean? It was like, I hadn't seen the guy since like 2018. And it felt like it was like a couple years maybe.
Yep.
But it's just like these last 4 years, it's like it didn't even matter. You know, everything was just, you know, at warp speed, man. No pun intended.
Yeah, no, 100%. That strikes me as absolutely true.
And the press, let's talk about what the press is up to right now.
You've
seen in the last 24 hours after the Biden regime floated the idea of importing hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. which we all knew this was coming. We knew it was coming. Obviously, we called this right around, call it October 8th, 2023. We saw that this was happening. But yeah, I mean, the headlines are beautifully constructed to try to hide the fact that 75% of Palestinians in Gaza support Hamas and want to destroy America.
Yeah, right. And this to me, you know, I remember I wrote about this maybe, man, probably about a year ago or close to a year ago, about the, like, this is a long running thing for the press to try and like demystify Palestinians for the American public in a way that like somehow oddly evades the fact that they have a super, super high, just like this is public polling, right? Like, I don't want to throw inferences about like what I think about Palestinians. Like,
no.
You like people have polled them. And
yeah.
The polls really consistently show that, like, especially when these conflicts kick up, there's like 75% support for Hamas, right? And like,
yeah.
And support for Hamas, as I think we're, when we think rightly about that, isn't like, oh, globalize the Intifada, or like, oh no, Israel's bad. Like, no, these are people who like are very comfortable killing children and raping women in the name of the goals that they seek, they being Hamas.
Yeah.
And so the fact that an overwhelming majority of people who would be declared as refugees under Biden's plan share this same sentimentality should be galling and shocking and horrifying. But as usual, as the press kind of always does in these moments, it's like they have the hate has no home here signs in their yard because they know that they won't have to deal with it, right? These people are gonna go into refugee housing in inner cities and other places away from the gilded ivory towers of the press.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They're never gonna have to worry about this thing. It'll just be real people who do.
Yeah, and a lot of people in the press like Hamas, you know. I mean, they share the goals of Hamas. Just destroying the West. They hate the West. They hate.
Yeah. And they're sympathetic to all to like Hamas's worst instincts, right? Like if you were, and I really do think as you know, as someone who's written a whole lot about Israel and the way that the media covers Israel, like the media is so quick to give credence to grief that people have with Israel, rightly and wrongly, but they also are so willing to accept the worst of Israel's enemies. And not even the best of Israel. And I think you really see this with the Hamas examples, right? Because like to the press, these guys are just like, they're the underdogs. They're the, you know, they're the brave freedom fighters who are out there just trying to get their land back or whatever. And if you cover them that way over and over again, day after day, month after month, year after year, how can you not start to believe it, no matter how ridiculous it is?
Yeah.
And I think that's that there's an outcropping of this when you start to talk about the refugee conversation.
And for anybody who was born yesterday or doesn't know anything about foreign policy, when the Jordanians imported hundreds of thousands of Palestinians, they tried to overthrow the government. So the kingdom murdered a bunch of them and expelled the rest. Just Google Black September, folks. Then the Palestinians went to Lebanon and turned that country into a failed state. The Saudis and the Egyptians are like, LOL, no, we want nothing to do with them. So it is incredible.
As they have always done.
As they've always done. These people know nothing.
None of their neighbors have ever had any interest in taking them in. And like very, very vehemently push back on any efforts from the West or for others to allow them in as refugees, regardless of what happens.
Yeah. I mean, it's a phenomenon. I mean, it's like 100% of the press. And then most Democrats and a lot of libertarians even, which is super annoying, which they'd knock it off. But they a lot of people are drunk on this notion that, like, America is to blame for everything in the world, which, like, I mean, America hasn't been around long enough to be to blame for everything in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
A lot of these conflicts go back thousands of years, not hundreds of years, so that doesn't really make any sense.
Right.
But, like, you know, a lot of people are just, like, America sucks. Therefore, Israel's. I don't even think it. I mean, some people just really hate Israel, but like, I think for most of these people, it, especially journalists, I don't think it really has anything to do with Israel. They just view Israel as like white people or like an extension of the West or America or something like that, which doesn't really make any sense. But like, I think it's just a hatred of their own country more than anything else, and they just pretend. And it's coming from all sides too, but definitely the vast majority of the press, it's like they've convinced themselves that like America, I mean, it's like America is the only country that matters for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if everything is just people reacting to America,
yeah.
And it's like guys, these people like Palestinians, like are human beings that make their own decisions about the world,
right?
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like it's not just like oh America just. Shut it all down and the world would be some peaceful utopia. It's like, okay, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
you talk exactly. Like America's only been a powerful country for 75 years. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, that's just not how the world works, man.
Right, exactly. And I think, you know, for a lot of folks in the media, particularly after the, you know, the summer of 2020 and the conversation shifting about race, I think one of the things that you've really seen is that the media and a lot of other people on the left, they try and drop all issues, all conflicts, domestic or international, into like their schema of black good, white bad. And they try and kind of import U.S. race relations into these foreign conflicts. And so I think you're right. I think they look at the Israel Palestine conflict not as about Israel or Palestine, but about white people and therefore settlers and therefore colonialists, as preposterous as it is, and Palestinians as disenfranchised and black and getting the short end of the stick, not just from Israel, but from the rest of the world, too.
Yeah.
And I just I don't think they slow down to think about ways that that schema doesn't necessarily make sense in international conflicts, because it's comfortable for them, I think, and definitely comfortable for a lot of their readers.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And the press is obviously running cover for the protests on college campuses right now. The apparently, as of last night, the transgender race communists are kidnapping Jews. The Democrats protesting at UCLA last night kidnapped and beat the crap out of a Jewish kid in the middle of the night last night. And, man, you are seeing arrests now at Columbia, a couple of the universities in New York, not really many out on the West Coast yet. But this shit is going to turn into the press cannot – no matter – look, the press running covers for these people, it's just not – you're seeing the universities throwing in the towel, bringing in the cops. Like, this shit is going to turn into a Toby Keith song in a hurry. If people aren't careful, man,
that's a really good way to put it, unfortunately. And I will say, you know, like we had talked about this a little bit before we started recording. Like, I'm obviously not sympathetic to the students and their goals and their support of Hamas. And like, I think in general, like the kind of dainty, effeminate college student who doesn't understand the world but has strong views of it anyway is something that I've long resisted and definitely infects the media. But as much disdain as I have for that kind of community, I do think I train more of my ire on the university decisions in all of this, right? Like the decisions by universities who are oddly, I think, among some conservatives, they've like almost become the good guys in this, right? And the police have oddly become kind of the good guys in this. And for me, it's like, whoa. I really think we ought to remember how much we don't like universities and why, right?
They cultivated this. They did this.
Exactly.
This is them.
They are reaping the instincts that they have sown in these kids. And the hypocrisy to me is jarring, right? Like, don't forget the DEI efforts of all of these universities in 2020 and 2021. They were, you know, they had their cat of nine tails. They were whipping themselves, lashing themselves for their sins on race. Forever, and now they're calling in the police to arrest people for camping, right? And like, a lot of those kids aren't white, and I saw this hysterical tweet the other day about how universities in 2020 were like, we have opened up the Malcolm X Center of White Apology, and then the follow-up is 2024, and it was like, if you were exposed to tear gas at the Malcolm X Center for White Apology, we have put dish soap. Make sure you wash out your eyes. And I saw it, and I was like, that truly perfectly encapsulates the way universities have responded to this thing,
hang
right?
In the
like
Louvre.
It's truly. And I saw it, and I was like, this is it. This typifies the American university, who still are, like, in my book, unregistered hedge funds that are taking zillions of dollars, profiting on the fact that they're not taxed, and just making themselves money, and then going whichever way the wind blows on everything in the universe. And so to me, like, yeah, the kids are idiots, right? They're idiots. I think it's very valid in many cases. They're anti-Semitic. And it's certainly time for so many of them to learn the consequences of their actions. But I really don't want us to lose sight of how evil and how malign the influence of these universities are in the places where they operate and in like the national discourse and dialogue more broadly.
Oh, 100%. And a lot of Republicans are trying to give the left an escape rope here, and I don't really understand why. I mean, let them burn down. I hope these protests go on for years.
Yeah, let it go. Like,
I hope Columbia burns to the ground.
I don't understand why, like, you know, Speaker Johnson went to Columbia the other day, and I couldn't get it through my head. I was like, who, like, what is the, not even Republican, but like, what is the government interest in this? Like, Columbia can't take out its trash. Columbia can't do what it should. That sounds like a city of New York problem. And the way that they handle that, I will probably also disagree with, right? Because, like, I think that Columbia's handling of the situation has been horrific and bad, and will continue to be. In many cases, the police response and the use of force has been awful and bad as well. But, like, why does a national political figure, particularly a Republican not from the state of New York, why does he care about this? Why is this worth your time? Like, let them reap the whirlwind of the sentiments that they've sown in these students. Let their hypocrisy be exposed and let them handle their own problems.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't know why. I mean, your opponents are destroying themselves. Why would you step in? I mean, it's crazy.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
Exactly. And for whom are you stepping in too, right? Like, I don't, like, are you concerned about the use of force on students? I probably not. Are you concerned about, like, the impact it has to the greater Columbia University campus community? Probably not. Are you concerned about the administrators? Well, gosh, I sure hope not.
To be a conspiracy theorist about old Mike Johnson. I mean, we saw a few weeks ago when he was talking all that shit about defunding the FBI and stuff. Then he has a meeting with the FBI, and he's like, love the FBI, love it. We need the FBI. We need to raise funding for the FBI. Trump's right. Build them a big, new, beautiful building in D.C. We love the FBI here. It's like, oh, yeah, buddy. They showed you your fucking file, didn't they?
Because wherever the wind blows,
You went from Freedom Caucus to, like, a hardcore statist in a hot second, brother. Like, I don't know, man. Doesn't take many conspiracy theories to figure out what's going on there.
Yeah, that's so fair. And I mean, it's the sort of thing too where, like, if AOC, as a New York representative who I'm sure is, you know, blood of the blood of these kids, and in terms of their politics and their sentiments and their views on protests, like, if she wants to go down there and, like, fake put her hands behind her back as if she's being cuffed when she's not, again, like, fine, whatever. Again, don't interrupt your enemy when they're making a mistake. And so, like, fine, if she wants to go do that thing, go do it. Amplify these protests, let them thrash it out. This is, to me, it does kind of feel like this is the schismatic moment that the American university, particularly the elite university system, has been flirting with for years and years and years. And so, like, let them have that out. And I think I'll feel the same way in Chicago when the Dems go in for their convention. And it looks like, unfortunately, probably looks like a college campus does right now.
Yeah, you it's going to look like Gaza City.
Here in a couple months. I really worry it might. And so I don't understand why Republicans are doing anything other than, like, pointing to this and saying, you can vote in 2024 and you can have more of this or you can have less of this. Like to me, that's the political takeaway. But just I don't quick, know. The soothsayers maybe have something smarter than I do.
Just a quick side note. Did you see all the college professors with their cute matching protest vests?
Yeah. Yeah. And like,
they're so cute. The professors.
I think the other thing that I think kind of sticks in my craw, and I know I said I'm not as worried about the protesters as I am about the universities. And I think that that's still true. But, like, I worry that a big part of this for students, probably for professors, is, like, this crisis of meaning that I think we have in America. And I, you know, the way that the pandemic intersects with that, but, like, I can't help but think that if these kids and these professors had something better to do, I would think they might be doing it. But I worry that we're all just kind of languishing, and particularly, like, elite students in elite universities are languishing. And that we're going to have these kids who are role playing 1968 until they're blue in the face about something that, like, they probably don't actually care that much about and certainly don't understand particularly well.
No.
I just worry that, like, we could have approached it that way and said, all right, this is silly. This is dumb. And instead we're like, all right, send in the National Guards. And I just worry that it's going to keep escalating, regardless of how silly and how kind of dispiriting and depressing a lot of the motives behind all of this are. We're gonna end up with the summer of 1968 sort of situation in terms of the consequences.
Yeah, and 2020 broke the country, man. Like between the mental health crisis caused by the lockdowns and Anthony Fauci and all that, to every degenerate Democrat from coast to coast learning that the law doesn't apply to them and they can assault people and destroy property with immunity. I just have a sinking feeling, man, that I mean, these colleges, you know, Democrat mayors and stuff like that, we're never going to protect Kenosha, Wisconsin. You know, we're never going to protect these cities from street communists.
Really good point.
But these universities make billions or tens of billions of dollars a year.
Yes.
I mean, their endowments are huge. They will send in the cops to protect their property. And I just don't. I mean, we have a few more weeks before these universities close for the summer, and I don't know what it's going to do to the country if we have a bunch of 90-pound trannies getting Kent stated on TV. You know, I just, these kids, they learned over the last several years that they will never be held accountable. Some of them are going to be held accountable. And when, if you're kidnapping Jews and you're destroying property, you're occupying buildings, you're doing things like that, and you also believe that the law doesn't apply to you and the cops won't actually do anything because you're a Democrat, it just seems like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, you know, and
These college administrators, they are ideological idiots. They are crazy leftism, but they love money more than they love leftism. Make no mistake about that.
They absolutely do. Yeah, and that's the thing too, is that like I do think one of the potential good outcomes from all of this is that a whole bunch of like earnest leftists might be able to finally look at universities and be like, these are bad places to hang our hat. And these are bad people, and they have bad motives, and their interests are not our interests and never will be. They are motivated by by getting as much money as they can invest in the stock market. That's it. That's what they want to do.
I mean, until maybe 30 years ago or so, the Ivy League schools, there were benefits to getting into one of these schools. I mean, you got a higher quality education and all of that. That really hasn't been the case for a long time. I mean, you see some of these people, these educators on these Ivy League schools, are all morons. Mm-hmm. They don't know anything, you know. And so these schools, Columbia and Harvard, Harvard just went through their anti-Semitic couple months news cycle. You know, the only thing propping up these universities is public perception and these parents earnestly believing that if they get their kids into one of these schools, it'll improve their lives. Once that goes, it's over for these people. You know what I mean? Because they're not providing an education any better than any cheap community college that you can pay your way through at this point. And once the parents funding these children realize that, these places are going to start dropping like flies. And that is the best case scenario here, that these institutions go away for good.
Yeah, exactly. And or at least, like at the very least, lose their mantle as like the people who provide the imprimatur of the next generation of people who run the country. Right. Like if nothing else, if these protests and their response can start to shift away from the idea that like getting a Columbia degree is worth it to like rich parents. Wow. That might be a really positive good that comes out of this.
100%. One more thing I want to mention before I let you go. I know we're almost out of time, but the press, it's funny. The press, it's just what it's, you know, even if they're not like lying or making things up, it's just it's really funny to watch what they choose to cover and what they don't.
Yes.
And you're going to see a lot more of this over the coming months. But a lot like corporate journalists, they were really banking on getting that ratings boost, that boost in clicks and viewers that usually accompanies a presidential primary. Right. But since the Republican primary wasn't much of a primary, and they sure as shit aren't going to cover the Biden regime making a mess of the world or the Democrats kidnapping Jews on college campuses. They're obviously not going to talk about that. So a lot of these guys are spending a ton of time speculating as to who Trump will pick as his running mate. Like in the last week, there's been like 1,000 pieces written, and not to be a buzzkill.
I feel like I can't go through Twitter for 8 seconds without seeing 5 new pieces about who it might be.
And I wrote a piece about this for Washington Examiner yesterday about how it quite literally does not matter at all. Like it literally does not matter. Zero votes will change no matter what. This is Biden versus Trump. They're both 1,000 years old. The only question that is like, can Trump keep the focus on Biden? Or yep. Can Biden turn the focus back to Trump? That's the only factor that matters. Americans hate both guys. Like 65% of the country hates both of them. It just comes down to who they hate less at the moment. Like the VP pick literally does not matter at all. But it's just something that the press can talk about to avoid talking about what actually matters.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Because it's so much more comfortable for them to go back and rely on those sorts of things instead.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's just like I talked about this in my piece yesterday. Like Tucker and MAGA world talked a big game about how they wouldn't vote for Trump if he picked like a neoconservative like Nikki Haley.
Mm-hmm,
and like
mm-hmm.
That's a good soundbite, but that's what we call in the business a lie.
Like, yeah, I was going
to
say.
I mean, come on. Like Trump went soft on.
I believe is what we refer to those sorts of things as now.
Yeah. I mean, like they would bend over and take it if Trump picked John Bolton, man. Let's be honest. And if Trump picked some like weird grifter like Carrie Lake and. Or a Democrat like Tulsi Gabbard, like the Mitch McConnell types will still vote for him. Like, it's just not that kind of election. Some elections, it does matter who the running mate is. And if Biden replaced Captain Venn Diagram, Kamala Harris, it wouldn't help him out much either. It's just which extraordinarily old man with 1,000% name recognition do the voters hate come the first or second Tuesday in November. I mean, like, it's so funny. It's everyone knows this. Everybody knows the stage is set. We know the players. You know, it's just like college campuses are burning down. The foreign policy is just all over the place. We're careening towards economic calamity. We're adding $1 trillion to the national debt every 100 days, okay?
Yep.
We're talking like $3.8 trillion a year and rising, you know what I mean? And they talk about like, oh, is it going to be Marco Rubio or Tim Scott? You people.
Yep.
You
exactly,
people.
Exactly. It's like, come on. You know, like you have to know deep down that this simply does not matter.
No, not at all. Not at all, man. So once again, plug the new Substack, man. It's great. I encourage everybody to subscribe. Where can everybody check it out?
Yeah, absolutely, man. So I'm on Substack. The name of the Substack is Holden Court. If you search either for Holden Court or for my name, Drew, last name's Holden, as I'm sure you guys hopefully know by now, you'll be able to find me there. I've also got a Twitter account for the Substack. It's Holden_Court. I've also got an Instagram for it. I don't know if you guys are on Instagram. I'm not super familiar with it, so I'm kind of like relearning how to use it in a professional sense. But if you search for Holden Court, I think it's Holden_Substack on Instagram. And yeah, so sign up. I've got a lot of free subscribers. All my content is going to be free, at least for the near future. And so go check it out. See what you think. Throw me some scratch if you're interested. And I'll keep bringing you the best of what I got about the media and some other topics beyond.
Absolutely. Everybody follow Drew. Everybody check out the Substack. It is a must read. That's all I got for today. I'm Brady Leonard. I'll be back on Monday. No gimmicks.